Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Monday morning. It's December 1st. Currently 15 degrees and sunshine here in Old Town Park City. Heber City's at 20 degrees. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Monday, KPCW listeners. It's time for a look at your forecast for the Wasatch Back. As we go throughout your Monday, we're looking at lots of sunshine, a few high clouds in the afternoon, but oh, it's going to be cold out there. We've got those temperatures starting off into the teens and low 20s. We're only going to see high temperatures rebounding to near freezing as we get towards the Wasatch Back, as we get towards the Heber Valley. But if you're in Park City, let's say, temperatures will likely hold below freezing as we go throughout the rest of today. Now, tonight, we're going to see those clouds thickening up as we go throughout the overnight hours. Temperatures dip down into the teens again in the Heber Valley, upper teens to right around 20 in Park City. As we go throughout the day on Tuesday, highs will only be in the mid-30s there in Park City, highs only in the upper 30s in the Heber Valley. And yes, we will see increasing chances for some snow developing, especially by Tuesday afternoon into Tuesday night, with accumulating snow likely Tuesday night and early Wednesday morning as low temperatures dip down into the low 20s across the Wasatch Back early Wednesday morning. So yes, we're looking at another accumulating snow event. I do think the potential is there for an additional 2 to 4 inches with some isolated amounts up to 5 inches across the Wasatch Back, closer to 2 inches there in the Heber Valley, but closer to 4 to 5 inches for places like Park City and areas above 7,500 feet. As we go into the Thursday, we do see quiet conditions but frigid temperatures as we dip down to around 10 degrees early on your Thursday morning. Highs will struggle to rebound near freezing again Thursday afternoon in the Park City area, with highs only in the mid-30s in the Heber Valley. As we go into your Friday, we start off with some clouds out there. Temperatures down into the mid to upper teens Friday morning. Bundle up, but notice Friday afternoon, highs only in the mid-30s in Park City. Highs only around 40 in the Heber Valley, and we could be tracking yet another wintry weather-making system moving our way as we get towards your Friday night into Saturday. Details are still a little iffy on this one right now in terms of specifics, but looks like we start off with some snow potential, maybe mixing with some rain in the afternoon, but overall looks like another accumulating winter event as we get towards the weekend. We'll keep you updated as we go throughout the week. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
It's 8:09. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. We'll stay tuned. Coming up, we'll be checking in here with Summit County Sheriff PIO Skylar Talbot. Heber City Manager Matt Brower later on will preview tomorrow's City Council meeting. And from Park City Ski and Snowboard, Tommy Eckfeld and Hatch Hasluck with an update on some of the club's winter's programs. Then stay tuned for Mountain Money. Today's guests include Marcia Gray of the Real Christmas Tree Board. Then Shannon Conklin discusses her business, Your Organic Edge. Then Rick Nemiroff and Jeff Mahan talk about the grand opening of Chomp Donuts. All of that coming up tomorrow on today's edition. Coming up today's edition of Mountain Money, heard every Monday from 9 to 10. Well, the annual month plus holiday season has begun, and in the studio with a few reminders of how to celebrate responsibly is Public Information Officer for the Summit County Sheriff's Office, Skylar Talbot. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you. Great. So let's start with drinking and driving. I mean, don't do it, of course, but it's, like I say, it's time to celebrate, you know, with all of the holidays and, of course, the new year. So let's talk a little bit about the BAC. That's the blood alcohol content in Utah was decreased from 0.08% to 0.05%. That doesn't give you a lot of leeway to imbibe. So can you give us an idea of what that means for someone who might drink?
Yeah, sure. So as you mentioned, 2018, I believe, is when that law took effect, moving the BAC from 0.08 to 0.05. It doesn't take much, Leslie, to get there. And, you know, there's so many different variables, the age of someone, the weight of someone, their metabolism, so many different variables. But somebody can easily get to 0.05 with one drink, 1.5 drinks. It doesn't take a lot. And I think a lot of people don't realize that, you know, you don't have to have 5 drinks to be over the limit. A lot of times one or two will put you there.
Yeah, especially, again, if you're smaller,
Exactly. There's so many variables. You know, if someone doesn't drink very often, if, you know, they haven't eaten, there's so many different variables.
Yeah. And I also, we should point out that drinking more water does not lower your BAC?
It absolutely does not. That's a common misconception. And, you know, I've personally dealt with folks who, you know, they'll have, you know, 5, 6, 7 drinks over the course of 3 hours, stop, chug a bunch of water, wait a couple hours, and then think it's okay to drive. Absolutely not. They've still got way too much alcohol in their system, and that water really hasn't done anything for them.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about what would happen if somebody is pulled over for suspected DUI.
Sure. So, you know, if one of our deputies makes a traffic stop, if they have a reasonable suspicion that, you know, that they need to do a DUI investigation, they will start that DUI investigation. And if during the course of that investigation, they develop probable cause to believe that you are under the influence of alcohol and driving, you're going to be arrested. Your car is going to be towed. You're going to spend at a minimum, the night in jail, maybe more, depending on the severity and if there's something to go along with the DUI, right? A lot of times, it's not just the DUI; it's the DUI plus you've crashed into a car. You've gone through someone's front yard. A lot of times, there's more charges, not just the DUI. And then you'll of course go through the court process and have to deal with that end of it too.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, if somebody is found guilty of DUI, what should they expect in terms of expense?
First time DUI is a Class B misdemeanor. It can be enhanced under certain aggravating factors. It can actually be enhanced to a Class A, even a felony level offense. Cost-wise, I think the biggest cost we can all agree is lives. A national statistic is about 13,000 lives per year are lost to DUI-related car crashes. Monetary costs, though, even for a first-time DUI, Leslie, you're on the low end, $3,000. On the high end, you could be over $10,000 dealing with that. There's so many different expenses. You've got the impound fees. We're going to impound your car 10 out of 10 times. You're going to lose your car. So getting that back, paying the state to get that back. Your bail, if you're going to bail out of jail, there's attorney fees, license reinstatement fees, ignition interlock, all sorts of fees, and they rack up so quickly.
Yeah, so DUI conviction requires a ignition interlock device?
In a lot of cases, it does. A lot of cases, a first-time DUI will result in an ignition interlock. And then obviously, a second-time offense, third-time offense, you're almost always going to be required to have that.
Yeah. And then, of course, after that, then you've got car insurance increases likely, huh?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I'm not a car insurance salesman, but I think anyone should likely expect a pretty sharp increase.
Yeah. And I think something that people don't think of is even on the first conviction of DUI, you will lose your license.
I can't speak to the whether that's mandatory or not. I can tell you, though, that there will always, almost always, be driver's license consequences on even a first-time offense.
All right. So any idea what the numbers are for DUI arrests since that lower blood alcohol content number was instituted?
I don't know specifically if we've seen a sharp increase in that minor change. I think it's important to note the change between 0.08 and 0.05, it's really not that big of a change. And, I think if someone, if we're arresting someone who's at a 0.08, it's not going to take much more to go from a 0.05 to a 0.08. So I don't know that really we can see any statistical, at least on the local level. I'm sure there's analysts that can dig way into it and come up with some numbers. I can tell you, though, as we go into December and February, those are, here in Summit County and nationally, those are the two highest months for DUI arrests and DUI crashes. We see a little bit of a spike in the summer as well. But here locally, it's about a 52% increase. So if we take our average, which is somewhere right around 21 DUI arrests per month for the year, if we look at just December and January, that spikes about 52%.
Wow. So you get stopped, you get pulled out of the car to do some field sobriety tests. Is that mandatory?
It's not mandatory, but it's generally going to be part of most any DUI investigation. That's a pretty standard part. It's in the name.
Yeah. So how and then you're asked to blow into a breathalyzer. Do you have to do that?
You are not required to blow into the portable breath test. There is a requirement in order to keep your license to participate in a chemical test. So that would be right after the arrest, whether that's blood or the intoxilizer back at the jail. That's what you're legally required to do. If you want to keep your license, you can, of course, refuse to do that as well. The consequence, though, is you're going to automatically lose your license, whether you're convicted or not.
Okay. So, I mean, are you better? I guess, how accurate are those breathalyzers?
The portable, they're designed to show the presence of alcohol. So in the, they're going to either say there is alcohol or there is not alcohol. They do give a reading of how much alcohol, you know, is in the system. They're not calibrated. They're not as stringently as the official intoxilizer at the jail, but they are 100% accurate in determining whether or not the presence of alcohol is there.
Yeah, and are there things that could cause a false positive on that?
There are. You know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that they're 100% accurate, 100%, you know, of the cases. They are a great tool, though, that our deputies use to, again, our deputies on the road, they're not establishing whether or not somebody is, in fact, guilty. That's what the court system does. They're just determining whether or not there is that probable cause. And, you know, the field sobriety test, the portable breath test, those are all tools to help them establish whether or not it is more likely than not that a person has been drinking and driving.
Okay. Well, as you mentioned, we know that those numbers are going to go up. So, you know, again, people, do your part.
Absolutely. You know, don't drink and drive. With the availability of, you know, rideshare, we've got a great bus system. You know, if those aren't options for you, drink at home. You know, just stay off the road. Even folks that, you know, wait a few hours, they'll you know, have four or five drinks, wait a couple hours, and then they think they're good to go. They're not. They you know, it takes about roughly, and there's a lot of variables here, but roughly 2 hours per drink. So, you know, if you're even having three glasses of wine, well, that's 6 hours before that alcohol has left your bloodstream.
Okay. Shop with a Cop is happening soon. When is this going to be?
Yeah, so this will be actually this Saturday, the 6th. I have my dates right. In the morning, we'll start out at the Doubletree Hotel in Park City, and then we'll take the kiddos over to Walmart as we do every year. So expect a little bit of a traffic delay on 224, probably right around 8:30 in the morning on Saturday.
Okay. It's always a surprise for people who don't know of what's going on, because you've got a long string of law enforcement vehicles, lights and sirens on. So
we tend to wake the neighborhood up. So if you don't know we're coming, it can be a little bit of a surprise. We, you know, have like 120 cop cars or so all going up 224. So be expecting that.
Yeah. And can people help with this? I mean, I know you collect donations.
Yeah, so the best way to help out with this is to contribute to your local Fraternal Order of Police lodge. So Park City has a lodge. Summit County also has a lodge. So if you would like to donate to those lodges, that's where the funds come from to put this on each year.
Yeah, any idea how many kids you help?
We try, for the Summit County side, we try to get between 5 and 7 kids from each school district. So, you know, it ends up being 40, 50 kids. And then of course, Park City is also doing the same thing out of their school. So, and I misspoke. I meant to say 5 or 6 kids from each school within those school districts.
Okay. Let's see. You're also seeing an uptick in vehicle burglaries just because people are out holiday shopping? Or?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We kind of see this ebb and flow with vehicle burglaries throughout the year. I think one of the main reasons that we see the uptick in early November, kind of through the winter, a couple reasons. One, it's getting dark a lot earlier, so people don't, these girls don't have to, they don't have to stay up real late to work under the cover of darkness. Also, it's colder outside. Folks aren't outside, you know, playing with the kids in the yard. There's more more opportunity. And really, that's what these are, Leslie. These are crimes of opportunity. So we remind folks, don't leave your car unlocked. Don't leave, you know, the laptop sitting in the front seat. Many of these, you know, when we see, you know, four or five cars on one street being burglarized, a lot of times it's folks just walking through, these criminals just walking through the neighborhood, pulling on door handles. And, you know, if you're the one on the block that has decided to leave your car unlocked with, you know, your computer sitting there, well, it's probably going to be gone.
Yeah, so they're just looking for anything they might find.
Yeah, you know, as smaller, you know, we see some of the silliest things taken out of cars, and it doesn't take much. So advice, just number one, obviously lock the car. Number two, don't leave your valuables or even your, you know, even if it's not super valuable to you, but it might be valuable to somebody out burglarizing cars, don't leave it in plain sight.
All right. So you're seeing more of that, just checking door handles as opposed to bashing in windows.
Yeah. Again, you know, it's the crime of opportunity. You know, folks will try and capitalize on anything that they can.
All right. Let's see. Tell me about a new community engagement software that the Sheriff's Office has implemented.
Yeah, so we're really excited about this. It's been up and running for about a month now. It's called Power Engage. And essentially what it is, Leslie, is it's a public-facing engagement tool. When somebody calls in to dispatch, whether it's for an emergency or non-emergency, they'll receive a text message sometime later. So whether it's an hour, it's set up to go out to them at different time intervals. Anyhow, they'll get this text message, and it's just a very short text conversation, right? So people aren't going to be clicking on links and things. They'll essentially get a text says, you know, this is the Summit County Sheriff's Office. We'd like to ask you a few questions based on your call into dispatch. They text back. I believe it's a 3 or 4 question survey. And then that all goes into our computer database and gives us a really, really good snapshot of, you know, generally, what are we doing right? Is there a pattern of things that maybe we could do differently to improve, you know, our level of service? So, again, if folks are calling in, if they can participate in those surveys, it's really helpful. I do want to give the caution, though, because we discussed scams, you know, a few weeks ago here, and if you're getting any, we're not going to ask you to click on a link. This is just going to be a text conversation. There's obviously going to be no personal information. It's going to be how was the dispatcher, how was the deputy, anything outside of that. Don't respond, right? Don't be clicking on links. We're not going to ask you any of that.
Okay. So is it anonymous?
It is. Yeah. It is anonymous. You know, on the back end, we can go in and see, you know, what call initiated, right? So if it is a bigger problem that warrants a little bit more, you know, action on our part, we can track down, you know, who was involved to solve the problem. But, you know, 9.5 times out of 10, it's going to be anonymous. We're just looking for patterns and really just to see how we're doing.
Okay. And I know this is a fire district investigation, but do you have any more information on that Thanksgiving morning garage fire in Colville?
You know, I don't have any additional information. It's so sad. And, you know, regardless of how it happened and what ultimately is determined, I just, my heart aches, you know, and wake up Thanksgiving morning to the garage on fire. What a terrible loss for those folks.
Yeah. Any idea? What were their vehicles in the garage?
You know, my understanding is there was one vehicle that was damaged. I don't know if it was in the garage or just close enough, but it sounded, when I read the shift report, it sounded like the garage was a total loss. There was some damage to the actual structure of the home and then some damage to a car as well.
Okay, Skylar, anything else?
No, you know, I hope you had a great Thanksgiving. I hope everyone else had a great Thanksgiving. And Christmas is coming up, so happy holidays. And we'll be back next month to chat.
Okay. See you next year.
Thanks, Leslie.
Skylar Talbot is the Public Information Officer for the Summit County Sheriff's Office. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. The Heber City Council meets tomorrow starting at 4 o'clock. And on the phone with a preview of the meeting, I have City Manager Matt Brower. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning.
Hey, let's start with the election. For the most part, status quo, with the addition of one new council member, Morgan Murdoch. In your experience, how long does it take somebody to get up to speed?
It will take some time. We run a complicated business. We have a lot going on. We've already started with Morgan and having some orientations and onboarding, but he'll learn it. He's a very smart guy who I've gotten to know over the last couple of weeks. I think he'll do great.
Yeah. And I guess what I heard during the campaigns was that both Mayor Heidi Franco and Councilmember Yvonne Barney would prefer to see limited growth, more open space. What do the results tell you?
Well, they tell me that the community wants to have reasonable growth, want to have smart growth. I'm also bound by state statute and city code, whereby we have to comply with land use laws of the state. And so what we try to do is balance the needs of the property owners with the requirements of the state and local laws.
Now, when does Mr. Murdoch get sworn in?
He'll be sworn in at our first meeting in January.
Okay. So that first Tuesday?
That is correct.
All right. Let's see. That would be the 6th. Okay. The big issues, of course, have been affordable housing and workforce housing, as well as traffic, especially on Main Street. Are you hearing about any ideas the mayor and council hope to bring to future agendas about these topics?
In January, my council will hold their annual retreat. And in that retreat, we'll talk about more strategies for affordable housing. In a recent meeting, council asked to have more information, more study sessions on affordable housing to make sure that they are knowledgeable about techniques and strategies, what other cities have done to be successful on that front. And so I think affordable housing, as it is in Park City and Summit counties, will become a more critical and important issue.
All right. And who sets the council agenda? Is it you or is it the mayor?
It's a combination of our team. It's me, the mayor, and the council members. Ultimately, the council, it's their agenda. It's their retreat. And they need to be very comfortable with what's on it and what they're going to discuss.
Okay. And is that for every city council meeting as well? A collaboration like that?
Normally, the agenda is set by staff according to our rules. The mayor or the city manager sets those agendas. The mayor and I sit in a pre-agenda meeting before we publish the agenda. So we work collaboratively and cooperatively together to set those agendas. Yes.
All right. Later on in tomorrow's meeting, the communication policy will be discussed. This was something that mayoral candidate Scott Phillips said he wanted to see implemented to avoid elected officials from sending out personal communications that appear to be, quote, official. Has that been a problem? And I guess just why the need for such a policy?
Well, I think Scott's perspective is he wants to make sure that city communication channels, whether it's a newsletter or perhaps a social media, are used to advocate and discuss city's official positions. I think there's some concern by Scott that maybe they're used by others, perhaps for promoting their own policies, their own political points of view. And so council's asked staff to place on tomorrow's agenda an item to continue discussing a policy to make sure that city communications are nonpartisan, non-biased, and meant to educate our local constituents on official matters and policies of the city.
And who has the final say on those communications?
Well, that's what the policy is going to review. And council is going to have, I'm sure, a robust debate on who is going to make those final reviews, whether it's me, whether it's a combination of me and maybe the city attorney. I'm not sure. But stay tuned. They'll see what they come up with.
Okay. Do you foresee just any backlog? I mean, trying to get information out and, you know, having to wait on somebody to check the box for approval?
Well, that's kind of one of the criteria we have to be aware of. Our communications to be effective have to be timely. And so what we have to consider is making sure that the process we put in place is one of timeliness, so we get information out that's accurate and, of course, timely.
Okay. The bypass recommendation once again pushed back until the new year. Do you agree with that decision, or do we just need to make a decision?
Well, it's not my decision to make. This is a UDOT project, and they have since, as you know, pushed the decision back to January. And so that's probably a good thing because we are in the holiday season. People's interest and focus are on other things at this time. And so maybe it's a bad thing because in January, people will come back and be ready and focused on UDOT and the work they're doing on the bypass, be more engaged perhaps.
All right. And this week, the council will be sharing some priorities for 2026. Do you have any top priorities? And if so, what are those?
So the priorities that council will talk about at the retreat include our Envision Heber 2050. That's a broad category that will encompass the Main Street Park investments that we talked about this past year, include C Street, which is a pedestrian avenue that goes from 200 South over here to Center Street. Also talking about dark sky, Aaron Cheatwood asked that we place an agenda on the retreat regarding dark sky and seeing if our policies are adequate to bring more compliance with that initiative. Also talk about affordable housing to make sure that we are doing what we can to provide affordable housing to the workforce, which is desperately needed in the area. So that's probably a few of the items that we'll discuss as priorities for 26.
All right. How did the city do at achieving this year's goals?
Not bad. In fact, at the retreat, we will report out to council how we were effective at moving the needle on council's priorities of last year. Council's top priority for 25 was Envision Heber 2050, and we've been successful at moving the needle on a number of items. Most predominantly was phase one of our street improvements, our Main Street improvements, including the Festival Street conversion and the main bandshell.
All right, but it does sound like the several of the goals need to be carried over to 2026.
Yeah, and that's not unusual. These goals are quite large and take multiple steps to achieve, and so that's not uncommon or unusual at all.
Okay. Let's see, the city selected a contractor earlier this fall for the redesign of City Park. Now that the council will award that contract and start the design phase, what are the main goals for this stage?
The main goal is first to finalize the concept plan for Phase B of the park. What that means is we want to make sure that council and the community is very confident with that final concept plan. That's important because that concept plan is ultimately going to inform and guide the construction documents, which will be bid, and that's what the phasing will look like, is those bid documents. And so this first phase of the second aspect of the park's improvements is to make sure that the concept plan is exactly what it is that we want. It is exactly including the amenities that we want, the scoping and the scale that we want. And once that's done, we'll move into the schematic and construction document phase.
And how much is this contract going to be worth?
The contract that council award tomorrow night is for just over $100,000 with, I think, a $22,000 contingency built into it.
Okay. The Wasatch Fire District says it'll need to build a station in the future Fitzgerald Farms subdivision. Where is this development and how many homes does it include?
The development's located due north of the Coyote Springs roadway, and it's been subsequently brought into the Jordan L. Ridge development. We've always intended for a fire station to be located on this parcel. The agenda item tomorrow is simply to finalize an agreement between the city and the fire district to dedicate the property to the district for the purpose of a new fire station.
All right. So what else is included in the agreement?
Well, the agreement we're going to discuss is just that. It's making sure that the fire district has the assurances they're going to be dedicated to the property that's required and needed for the next fire station.
And what financial obligations does Heber City have to help pay for these fire stations, as well as staff, as the city grows?
So we don't provide a fire service. That's done by the Wasatch County Fire Department. What we do is cooperate with the fire department to make sure, as we approve developments, that we put land aside so that we can build the necessary fire stations. And again, tomorrow night is simply to make sure that we have an agreement that meets both the city's needs and the fire district's needs for the transfer of that property to the fire district.
Okay, any idea how many more stations are contemplated and where they're gonna go?
I don't. I would invite you to get with the fire chief and have that conversation. I know he's got a couple more planned for Heber City, But as you know, they have the responsibility of providing fire service for the entire Wasatch County area.
Okay. This week, the City Council will look at a ground lease agreement for a new cell tower. So where's this tower going to go, and why is it needed?
The cell tower is being proposed on some property the city owns adjacent to the old hospital on 500 East. The city has a well, we call it the hospital well because of its location and proximity to the hospital. This is Atlas Tower. They're hoping to build a 65-foot tower that would allow for a primary location and a co-locate that would help provide additional coverage for cell service. The issue is an amendment that would be necessary to go from 35 feet to 65 feet to provide for the co-locate request. The issue here is that it's closer to a subdivision, residential subdivision, but they're all asking for a higher tower, which means there's probably one less tower that has to be built in the area. And well, as I do, that cell service is a key issue for people as they need their cell phones to do their work, to do their businesses, and of course for entertainment.
Yeah. Now, a different tower application for a tower up to 80 feet tall drew some public interest earlier this year because of the height. Do you think 65 feet is the sweet spot here?
We'll find out. I think so. So this is the same tower application, just moving from the tank site on Valley Hills Boulevard to this site. And so it's the same applicant asking for a little bit shorter tower that would allow for, again, a primary locate and a co-locate. This is adjacent to a neighborhood, so I suspect there will be some concerned citizens about the proximity, but we'll see.
All right. How does the city decide between a few tall towers versus a larger number of shorter towers?
That's the $8 million question is, do we want a lot more shorter towers or fewer taller towers? And that's really the policy issue at hand.
Okay. Let's see. This week, the council will continue to talk about the Heber Valley Airport during work session. We're talking about some hangar leases. So the city's the lesser on these?
Yeah, so we are unable to sell property at the airport, so we're required to enter into long-term leases, oftentimes referred to as reversionary or non-reversionary leases. On the agenda tomorrow during the work meet is what we're calling Airport Leases 101. And what we hope to accomplish is to simply train and inform our council along with the Airport Advisory Board on the best practices for leases at the airport. Why? Because we're looking to update our airport lease policy. And we feel like it's important, therefore, to make sure that everyone is knowledgeable and up to speed on the best practices.
Yeah, so this Ryan Like, I believe, of Aeroplex Group Partners mm-hmm. will be presenting. So who's he?
He is a consultant that we've hired who has assisted us with updates of other policies. He's currently working on a rates and fees policy, and we've asked him to do the lease update as well.
All right. And where does the airport master plan stand? Are any major changes coming soon?
So the airport master plan was adopted a couple years ago, as was the airport layout plan. The phase we're working on now is the environmental impact statement. We were told a couple weeks ago that we will be successful at achieving what's called a categorical exclusion, which means this environmental process will be wrapping up fairly shortly. That's key. That's an important part of the master plan's approval, is finalizing that environmental work, which should be done here in the early part of next year.
All right. It sounds like Heber City Mayor Hattie Frankel will be traveling to Milan Cortina, Italy this winter for the Olympics. What's the purpose of her trip?
There is a contingent from the state of Utah that's going, and it's my understanding that city that would have impacts from the Olympics were invited to send, I think, two people to attend. Heidi's accepted that offer and will go as a fact-finding sightseeing tour to see what is being done there in Italy, hoping to bring those lessons back so that we can have a successful Games here in 2034.
Yeah, how much does it cost to send a representative to the Olympics?
I'm not sure of that. I don't know if the state is picking that up. I'm not sure of those logistics, but I do know that she has accepted the invitation to attend.
All right, and Heber City's not a direct host of the 2034 Games. So what role does it play, I guess, as a neighbor of Wasatch-backed venues like Soldier Hollow?
Well, Heber anticipates having what we call a live site at our main park here off Highway 40. And so we expect to have activities going on every day of the Olympics here at the park as part of our live site. We also expect to have the parking in Heber this year, 2002. It was outside of Heber. We expect to have it this year, this next time in Heber. And we're hoping to have those visitors to Olympics come downtown, hoping to enjoy the entertainment, hoping to support our businesses, both retail and restaurants. So we expect to have a much, much bigger hand this next time.
Okay. Finally, I wanted to ask you about the roundabout art. Heber just added a new eagle sculpture in a downtown roundabout. Where can residents find that?
So the latest art installation was on Daniel Road to the south of town. This is an eagle that was made out of entirely recycled metal. And so if you look at the eagle, you'll see that it's 100% metal, made by an artist out of Logan. His name is Pearson. His last name is Pearson, and did a great job. We still have some more landscaping to do around the art, but it's pretty classy. It's along with the theme that we've done at all the other roundabouts, which is wildlife, and I think this is just a great fit.
Okay, and how much did it cost?
This costed about $13,000.
And where did that money come from?
It comes from a revenue source called Cap Tax. This is the Trails Arts and Parks revenue source that was approved by referendum about 2 or 3 years ago. The money can only be spent upon art and trail parks. So it was a dedicated source of funding just for this.
And how does the city choose the artists for public arts like murals and roundabouts?
So on the art, the council has said by policy, we want to have essentially wildlife themes. And so to date, we've got a life-size elk in one. We have a cougar in another one. In the third one, we have a gentleman on the horseback with a sheep and a sheepdog. And so all of these are ultimately approved by the city council, as their policy is to have and support wildlife art.
Okay, and any other art projects planned for Heber in the near future?
Well, let's see, the summer of 26 will be our 8th year of our arts and public places. So we expect to have another world-class mural added to the downtown somewhere. And so we'll be excited about that. And we have 3 or 4 more roundabouts coming online over the next 2 or 3 years. And each of those will have art placed in them.
Okay, Matt, anything else you wanted to mention?
I do. I want to mention our old-fashioned Christmas event, which is this Friday, December 5th, from 5 o'clock to 9 o'clock. Be held here at the Tabernacle as well as over at our Festival Street. If you love a Hallmark type of Christmas, this is your event. We invite you to come down and enjoy.
Okay. Thanks for the reminder.
Thank you.
Matt Brower, City Manager of Heber City. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW's Local News Hour. Well, with winter just around the corner, so are the youth ski and snowboard programs. In the studio with from Park City Ski and Snowboard, I have Performance Sports Athletic Director Tommy Eckfeld, along with Action Sports Athletic Director Hatch Haslock. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's start first with the reorganization of the club. As we've reported, Executive Director Christy Hind has stepped down. It sounds like she's not going to be replaced yet, or at least for now, Tommy?
For this season, yeah. We've Hatch, myself, and Jackie Wilkinson, our Director of Operations, have taken over as the executive team for the club, along with our board chair, Callum Clark, and we'll be helping to keep the ship upright and run as normal.
Okay, just thinking a way to save some money or just see if something like this works?
I think it's more about just maintaining and settling the club down from a departure from Christy. So, Hatch and I and Jackie have been here for quite a while now. We understand, the needs and what we have going on in the club in terms of our athletic program. So right now we're just right in the midst of getting everything rolled out, and we are looking forward to it.
Okay. Also some bad news over the weekend. Of course, Park City Ski and Snowboard alum Lauren Masuga. Sounds like she's out for the season with the ACL.
Yeah, it sounds like. I haven't talked to the family personally, but our hearts go out to Lauren for sure, and we'll try to do whatever we can to help support her in her road coming back.
Okay. Ski swap. How did it go?
Ski swap was off great success this year, definitely better than the last couple of years, so we were pretty excited. I think a lot of people were ready to clear out the garage, and a lot of other people were ready to get some new items, so it was pretty fun. We had a lot of activity. Friday night was like pre-COVID, pretty fun out there.
Okay, and I guess everyone who did sell something should have a check by now?
Yeah, checks. Jackie said checks went out a couple weeks ago, but if they haven't received an email or seen a notification that their check has been in their inbox, because all of those are delivered digitally, then please reach out to Jackie on our main line, which is on our website, parkcityss.org.
Okay, and then with all of the equipment that may have been left over, where does all that go?
That's the fun part, is for things that do, the consignment pieces that people want to just get rid of completely, or they just don't pick up. We have both YSA and St. Lawrence that ran a ski swap the following weekend after us. YSA does use a bunch of that equipment for their get out and play programs. So it's kind of a nice give back to the community.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about this performance sports, Tommy. SkiMo, tell us what's going on there.
Yeah, exciting there. You know, the Devo team is up to 40 athletes now. And as you know, that SkiMo program or the SkiMo sport is being debuted in the Cortina Olympics this winter. So I think there's some excitement around that. Cross-country groups are, you know, they're building as well. And everyone's just kind of waiting in the wings for the white stuff to hit the ground and get piled up so we can get skiing.
Okay. Let's see. You've also got the SkiMo World Cup happening. Are you going to send some athletes there?
Yeah, Griffin Briley will be included in that, and he's a PCS alum, so we'll be looking forward to him over at Solitude, supporting our national team members.
Okay, and what's going on with the cross-country athletes?
So cross-country, they actually were able to hit snow in Grand Mesa with our comp team, and we've also got our Kickers and Gliders program, which still has spots available, and that's our 7 to 11-year-olds, and they start on December 9th. Fingers crossed. Our high school club team, which was relatively a new team to us, it was just an effort to try to cross the bridge and keep athletes in the sport and still maintain more and retain more athletes, is still open. That starts December 8th, and we have a free try it day on December 3rd.
Okay, and how people can find that online?
Yep, they can find it online. They can reach out to Emma Gerard, our cross-country director, as well.
All right, and that you teach both the classic and skate style?
Exactly, yes.
Mm-hmm. And where do you operate that out of?
So that's going to be operated out of any one of our partner resorts at White Pine, Soldier Hollow, and then Round Valley, as well as the UOP.
Okay, and what about the ski jumping team?
Ski jumping, so they've got our comp team's got a new head coach, Casey Larson, fresh off the national team. So he's been a great addition to us and really helping Adam out, get those athletes in shape. Their first competitions don't really happen until mid-December, so up in a couple weeks over in Steamboat.
Okay, and then for the Alpine team, this is usually the week that you have placement day, but it sounds like you got a full team already.
Yeah, our team, similar to SkiMo, is roughly upwards of about 40 athletes now. So we have had great turnout over the years. And Leslie, if you remember a couple years ago, we shifted our placement to try to capture everyone's excitement finishing off the season in the springtime. So we moved it to a spring ski up rather than a fall placement day. And we've had very good success with that. It's allowed our Devo teams and new families to the program to get engaged right away with the club, to be a part of our fundraising efforts through the summer and fall, as well as, you know, just the communications and, you know, ski swap and just have the communication going back and forth with DAR.
Yeah, so if there were new families moving in, they need to wait or just...
Yeah, so we're full as of now. We're really looking to maintain, you know, the integrity and the consistency of the coaching that we have in maintaining that athlete-to-coach ratio so that our coaches don't get overloaded and we can still maintain the group. But we work obviously very closely with Mike Sussman and the farm team at Park City Mountain. So those programs still may have some availability, and we're, you know, obviously moving athletes around as they communicate with Jason Lanser, your programs director.
Okay, and what about the older Alpine athletes?
The older ones have found snow, and they've had to go, obviously, a little bit higher to the Rockies of Colorado, and they're also up at Big Sky. We've got a group up there right now, and we've got U14s and our U18 groups have just returned from stints in Colorado and Big Sky.
All right, and do you have a number of races planned for either Park City Mountain or over at UOP?
Yeah, we've got... one of the things we love to see is an age class offering for every age in our group, in our program this year for Alpine. So we've got a new events and competitions director, Brent Greigel, who's been doing a great job running all of our events across the club on snow regarding for sport. But we're going to have events both at Park City Mountain with the IMD finals in March and the David Wright Memorial in the beginning of March. And we've also got other Alpine races with our U18 FIS Tech Series and the University of Utah Invitational in February.
Great. All right, Hatch, let's move on to the free ride team. What are things happening there?
Well, we're going to kick off the season a little bit with a team building event tomorrow night, December 2nd at Woodward. So get the group together. That group we take, usually you don't start a little bit till a little bit later. December 13th is our targeted date. But with the snow, we like to have a little bit of more skiing. So hopefully that will happen by then.
So what's the difference between free ride and free ski?
Excellent question. So free ride is basically big mountain is sort of what it was known as. So it's competing up on the upper part of the mountain. Steeps, sometimes there'll be cliff bands or trees or chutes or things like that involved in a competition, and you're choosing a line down the mountain. So it's really an all-mountain experience. That group focuses about 80% of their time on the upper part of the mountain, but they do ski the lower part of the mountain as well. They sometimes will go into the terrain park to work on some area skills so they can have some agility and different other aspects of skiing as well.
So was that purely a speed race, or is it technique?
Oh, it's technique for sure. So when all of the free sports is focused primarily on technique. So you're scored basically on your line. That the judges will actually assign a value to the line, and then everything is based off of that. And they look at control, they look at fluidity, they look at your technical ability as you're skiing down the mountain.
Okay, and then for the free ski athletes.
Yeah, so free ski is basically, that's terrain park associated. So essentially half pipe, slope style, big air, rail jam. So that crew is getting started actually this morning, but they are indoors at Woodward instead of outdoors because they're not quite ready yet.
Okay, and you do have openings in the programs?
Yeah, we have openings in both of those programs still available. At the free ride, it's really just Wednesdays and some weekends. Our Tuesdays are pretty packed already with our full-time kids. But we also, both of those programs also offer some stuff in the evenings at the Olympic Park in Woodward.
Okay. And then for the freestyle team.
Yeah, our freestyle team, our FIS team is actually over, up in Canada right now. They've already been to Hintertux, but now they're over in Apex. And they're preparing for the U.S. selections, which happens in Winter Park, Colorado, just next week.
Okay, so we're talking freestyle moguls and aerials.
Moguls and aerials, yeah. The aerials, we're still waiting for enough snow to get our aerial site built here. We're hoping, we were targeting for tomorrow, but that's definitely going to be pushed back to the weekend at earliest. Hopefully we can get that off this weekend, but we're pretty excited to get that happening. We will be hosting the U.S. selections for aerials here on December 19th.
Okay. And the snowboard team?
Our snowboard team, much the same. They're going to get started at Woodward Indoors. They're going to get started today as well. But that program has about 63 athletes that are registered currently. And we do have room for more. Last year we had right around 100. So we're a little bit down on the snowboard side. So if any of you snowboarders out there want to come out and play and have fun with us on snow, come on out. We'd love to have you.
So is Woodward the main training ground for all of these teams, or do you use the Park City Mountain and UOP as well?
I would say Park City Mountain is our main training ground, but Woodward is a huge part, especially of the snowboard team. All of their after-school training happens at Woodward for snowboard.
Oh, that's for all of the teams then?
And then with the free ski and free ride, they have about 1 or 2 days a week that are available in the evenings. And then our FIS team or our competition team for free ski will choose wherever it's best. So if there's a great line over at Woodward, we're going to go over there. If there's a great line at Park City, you're going to see us there.
Okay. Let's see. We're going to bring you back in January to talk more about the Town Race Series, but it is coming back, Tommy.
Yeah, for another year. We're excited this year. We're kind of rolling out a new format. We don't have everything fully polished yet to roll out to you today, but we're working on that. We'll have it out throughout this month.
Okay. And then you also have a Black Friday auction going on. What's this?
Yeah, so our new development director, Heidi Volker, she has, curated this Black Friday, which has been a number of trips and other gifts ski-related to help kind of finish off our fundraising season. And it started on the 26th, and it runs through this week. But it's just, again, a final fundraiser for the club.
Okay, people can check out the items?
Yep, they can hit our website, parkcityss.org, and you'll see the Black Friday listed right there on our main site, and you can click on that, and you can bid and check out the items.
Okay. And you said it ends, what, Friday, or you said this week?
It runs through December 5th.
Okay. Anything else?
Yeah, you know, we'd want to really give a sincere thanks to our community for the strong support this fall. It makes a real world of difference for our athletes and programs. We had a number of fundraisers, and we feel every fall that we're asking, and now it's the time where we really get to give with our coaches on Hill. So we're really looking forward to now being able to shift gears. But a special thanks to YSA, PCSEF, and ULF for all their scholarship efforts to help scholarship our kids and really try to keep our tuitions down for those athletes.
Okay. Tommy, Hatch, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
Thanks again.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW.